We're heading into election season, and a lot of us are gearing up, or maybe a better way of saying that is bracing for impact. But we all know that underneath the surface, we're cracking. We're not coming together as a nation. And given enough time and enough tribalism and anger and rage and corrupt government officials, right? And everyone seeking their own way, we will absolutely collapse. When it happens, if it happens, I don't think we should really be surprised, do you? The $6 million question is, how do we change this? If you're a Christian, you definitely should have an answer to this question. Welcome back to another episode of Wise Disciple. My name is Nate, and I'm helping you become the effective Christian that you are meant to be. Today, we're looking at Tucker Carlson give an answer at a conference, and I think he just let slip how to save our nation. I don't know if people caught how profound this actually is, so let's get into this, and I'll make some connections for you that will help you wrestle with this issue yourself. If you're someone concerned about our nation, you're seeing what's going on around you, and it ain't good, right? I mean, we're about to head into election season, okay? Then this video is for you. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the channel. And do me a favor, if this video is helpful to you at all, please share it with someone else so we can all get on the same page as Christians in today's culture. All right, Tucker Carlson was speaking at the National Conservatism Conference. This was back in 2019, which is why I say I think a lot of people might have missed this because I don't remember this making headlines, okay? But like I said, I think he just gave the answer to saving our nation. He just shined a spotlight on how to do it. Okay, so he's doing Q&A and someone asks him, what is the most important thought that we have not been given the permission to say out loud? Like as a people and a society? It's a fascinating question. Here's his response.
You know, the thing that I go back to, and I'm not even sure that, I mean, this is not like spine-tinglingly controversial, but it's almost never said, you know, countries don't hang together just because. The natural state of man is not progress. I mean, that's like a complete lie. Anyone know what the Bronze Age collapse was? Yeah, okay, so the one person. So the Bronze Age collapse was, there was a Dark Age before the Dark Ages, right? So it was about 1500 years, 1500 BC. 1200 BC, okay. I knew it, look, I bow to superior knowledge. When basically the sum total of human knowledge disappeared, and we're not quite sure, we're still trying to kind of figure out, we may never know. But it mirrored very much the Dark Ages. By the way, do you know how medieval Europe, and by the way, all the way into Levant, the medieval world, got lead, the substance lead, for pipes and cooking and later for ammunition? They took it from Roman ruins. That was the sole source of it, from Roman ruins.
So the point he's making is the Dark Ages, it's not a one-off. Like, if you don't know, so the Dark Ages is a period of time in the early Middle Ages, this is after the fall of the Roman Empire. And the reason why it's called dark is because the period before it, which is known as classical antiquity, you know, or the Greco-Roman era, it's a time of great cultural and intellectual advancement. But in the Dark Ages, you have the total opposite. In the Dark Ages, there is almost no cultural intellectual advancement. People, in essence, are feeling their way through the dark. And you know, also there's a lot of death and disease that marks the period. But the point that Carlson is making is, that's not the first time this happened, okay? So perhaps we as human beings lean towards cultural collapse. Perhaps we just naturally tend to stray into dark age periods, which is not the typical understanding of many today. We tend to think that society and technological advancement always trends in one direction. As a matter of fact, we tend to take for granted in our culture that things are always going to progress for the better. And that's just not true.
Because the technology, which is not complex technology, required to mine lead and separate it from silver or zinc or whatever, because it's an alloy, was lost. No one had any idea how to do it. Only for like 1,000 years, not a big deal. So I guess, what's the point? The point is that there's no reason that this should continue apace on the trajectory it's currently on. There's no reason that shouldn't happen again. It's happened at least twice, probably happened more than that. But by its nature, we don't know, right? So what's the point? The point is, what does it take to hold a country together, particularly a country in which there's no majority?
So I have an answer to this question. And stick with me, because I'm going to give you that answer later. If you're a Christian, you definitely should have an answer to this question. As a matter of fact, I'm curious, like, what is your answer to the question? You watching right now, like, how do nations stay together at all? Let me know in the comments, you know, let's think through this together in real time.
Right, where there's no obvious thing that holds people together, not even history, because it's such, the demographics change so much. I'm not against that, by the way. I'm not against, there's nothing inherently bad about rapid demographic change. I'm not, or immoral, I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that it makes it even more important for the people in charge to think through, like, what does hold the country together? What do we have in common as Americans? If a war were to break out, why would we all fight? And what are we fighting for? What is this country? What does it mean? Is it just the sum total of commerce? Is it the GDP? Is it something more than that? I mean, these are not only interesting academic questions, they're vital practical questions. Because if you don't answer them, the country will actually fall apart, for real. That's not a right-wing point, it's an obvious point. And it's a measure of how unbelievably stupid, and I mean that like literally stupid, like low IQ stupid, bovine stupid, the people in charge are, that they're not waking up in the middle of the night and thinking, holy smokes, clearly the society's becoming a lot more volatile. How do we calm things down? How do we keep it strong?
That is the $6 million question. And, you know, look, we're heading into election season and a lot of us are gearing up, or maybe a better way of saying that is bracing for impact, right? You know, whoever's going to be president next, right? We're all just preparing, okay? But we all know that underneath the surface, we're cracking. We're falling more and more apart as a society. We're not coming together as a nation. No, what's happened is we've splintered off into these factions, these various groups that center on particular ideologies, and we all huddle together with people who agree with us. And one of the ways that we bond more as a group of like-minded individuals is we say to each other in the group, man, how much does that other group suck, right? Wow, like how bad is that other group? Man, that other group is so wicked, right? They're so evil. And you know what? We're so righteous. We're so virtuous. And when we all line up as various factions, right, we end up pulling out our weapons. It's like the end of some Quentin Tarantino film or something. Like everyone's weapons are out and they're all pointing at somebody else, right? Like, and the question is, who's going to shoot first? The $6 million question is, how do we change this? Like, how do we change course? Given this state of affairs, right, the diagnosis that I just provided for our society, how do we reverse this?
And nobody is, like literally nobody is. So I would say pressing that question, boy, we've pressed it a lot. You know, it's not an, I just made a case for diversity. But the idea that diversity is our strength, okay, tell me how. Is that true in your marriage? I'm serious. Is it? And I'm sure, I know there are a bunch of reporters here, and screw you, just ahead of time. But I know they're gonna be like, oh, Carlson comes out against diversity. I'm not coming out against diversity at all. I like diversity, actually. Just don't lie to me about it. Just don't lie, just stop lying, how's that? And why don't you explain how it works? If you're gonna make it our national motto, don't you owe me? And speak slowly so I can understand. How does it make us stronger? If I married someone who couldn't, I've been married, you know, almost 29 years. If I married someone who couldn't speak English and hated all my views, would that make my marriage stronger? Maybe it would, tell me how. If you had a military unit comprised of people with literally nothing in common, couldn't communicate, would that be a more effective fighting force? Would it be more cohesive? Like, it's insane, actually. Is the truth. And again, it goes back to what I was implying previously, which is like everything they say is the opposite of what's true. It's like totally bewildering. It's not.
So I don't know if Carlson, you know, has had any experience in debate or anything, but Carlson understands what I've been saying in many videos, which is, boy, when somebody gives us a challenge, right? When they come up and whether it's, you know, Christian, non-Christian, or just two human beings, maybe talking politics, right? When somebody gives us a challenge, we really need to fight the urge to just start defending ourselves. That's not what we have to do at all. And Carlson understands this. What we should do instead is put the focus back on the person who's providing this challenge, because the challenge is likely a statement. And if they've provided some kind of a statement, that's probably a claim that must be defended with good reasoning. And so if you realize what I'm saying, then you see that actually the work is not on your shoulders at all to defend yourself when somebody challenges you. The work is actually on their shoulders to defend themselves. And that's what Carlson is doing. Okay, I'll concede for argument's sake what you just said. Now explain it to me step by step. Start from the beginning, right? How does this work? And go slow, right? It's amazing. Also, Carlson is demonstrating in a negative sense the effects of what it looks like to have no answer to this question, right? The $6 million question. So hopefully he's going to lead to the clear and articulate answer. And like I said, I'm going to give you my answer, but let's just see how this plays out.
And it's what's so bewildering is, and maybe that's why it's so effective, it's so different from the way normal people lie. So I have a ton of children, like Mormon level of children. And I'm not like a great parent or anything, but I, you know, you just sort of learn by osmosis if you have enough of them. And one of the things that I learned a lot about is lying, because all kids lie, and they lie because they love you. They don't lie because they're bad. No, I'm serious. You don't lie to people you don't care about. When was the last time you lied to an Uber driver? Please. You spill your guts. If you're having an affair, you'll tell him. Why do you care? His judgment doesn't strike fear into your heart. It's like, it's irrelevant. Anyway, so kids lie because they love you. So you see a lot of lying as a parent, and it's always the same kind of lying. Like, you know, we're at a, you ate those cookies. You know, there were 10 cookies and they're gone and you ate them. And your kid will be like, oh, I only had 3. What happened to the other 7? I don't know. You know, it's a shade off of the truth. Yes, I ate the cookies, but I didn't eat all 10. Like, that's ridiculous. That's outrageous. I would never do that. Yeah, you did it. Of course you did it. The people who run our country don't lie like that at all. They're like, what? No, you ate the cookies. And you're like, what? No, I didn't eat the... Yeah, you ate the cookies. You freaking cookie eater. That's why you're fat. And after a while, you're like, man, maybe I ate the cookies. They're so aggressive. The dishonesty is so aggressive that it really makes you doubt yourself. It's deep, actually, and terrifying, and totalitarian, really, because it doesn't have any basis in reality at all. And that's why it's so effective. Anyway, and that's why they can say diversity is our strength. Anyway.
Okay, so he doesn't come out and provide a clear answer. But what he essentially does is he tosses the football so that we can take it from here and run with it down the field. So let's go ahead and do that, okay? What is the answer to the question that he asked, right? How do we keep a nation? How do we, given the state of affairs that we find ourselves in, how do we maintain this nation? And my answer is shared values, right? We share the same values. That's how we keep a nation together, ladies and gentlemen. And by the way, I'm not making this up. You know, we used to know this as a society a long time ago. So it's not like I just pulled this out of thin air. This is back going all the way to the Declaration of Our Independence. Hey, real quick, I'm so grateful that you're watching. If I've earned the right to get your sub, I'd love it if you would just click the like and subscribe button. It would really help me to get the video out to more and more people. I really do appreciate you. This is from the Declaration of Independence, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. Okay, what do we say? We hold these truths to be self-evident. What truths? These values. All men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Okay, what are these things? They're values. These values are what the entire United States had in common and used as a basis to write this declaration in the first place, right? The unanimous declaration of the United States. That's what we said. We stand on these values. By the way, the Declaration of Independence is the announcement to not only King George, but to the world that we are a new nation. And this status, this national status is based on shared values. Can you see that? That's the answer. And if that's the answer, well, then here's the question. What happens when we no longer share the same values? I think we're all watching the answer play out right in front of our very eyes, aren't we? Right? We now, as a society, clash over everything. We clash over music, movies, politics, definitely politics, right? We clash over science now, gender, right? Like, basically everything we could possibly consider clashing on, we do. Why? Because we don't share the same values any longer. And when that happens, the facade of our nation begins to crack. It begins to crumble. And given enough time, and enough tribalism and anger and rage and corrupt government officials, right? And everyone seeking their own way, we will absolutely collapse. That's a no-brainer. When it happens, if it happens, I don't think we should really be surprised, do you? We all used to know this, ladies and gentlemen. Our founding fathers used to talk about this stuff on a regular basis. This is John Jay, Federalist number, I think it's two. This is what he says. With equal pleasure, I have as often taken notice that Providence has been pleased to give this one connected country to one united people, a people descended from the same ancestors, speaking the same language, professing the same religion, attached to the same principles of government, very similar in their manners and customs, and who by their joint councils, arms, and efforts, fighting side by side throughout a long and bloody war, have nobly established general, here it is, here are the values, liberty and independence. Again, this is John Jay. He was one of the framers of the Constitution. He was the first Chief Justice of the United States, appointed by George Washington. But it's not just him. James Madison from Federalist number, I think it's 41, right? Every man who loves peace, what is that? It's a value. Every man who loves his country, every man who loves liberty ought to have it over ever before his eyes, that he may cherish in his heart a due attachment to the union of America, unity, and be able to set a due value on the means of preserving it. What he's saying is that in order to preserve the union of our country, we need to put these values, right? Peace, liberty, love of country, right? We need to put these ever in front of our eyes, and we need to hold on to them. That's how we will preserve the nation. That's the answer to the question that Tucker Carlson just asked. So we know the answer, shared values, but that doesn't solve anything actually, okay? Because of the rampant tribalism of the ideological factions that exist between people, I believe it is in our very nature, human nature, to categorize folks that are not like us as other, as outsider, as deplorables, as one presidential candidate put it, right? So then, okay, how can we think through this as Christians? Is it possible that we simply, by the very nature of being Christians, have a solution to this, right? From our biblical perspective, and the answer is yes. Jesus gives his disciples, right? This is everybody who follows him, including you and me today, right? The solution to overcoming the tribalism that human beings inherently possess. Matthew chapter 5, verse 43, Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven." Well, that's interesting. Sons do what the Father does. If the Father has a family business, the sons do the family business. They're doing what their father does, right? And so Jesus explains, "For the Father makes his son rise on the evil and on the good, and he sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You therefore must be," here it is, "perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." A lot of Christians read that last part and they get a little thrown, right? Wow, I need to be perfect. No, Jesus is not talking about perfection the way that we understand it today. He's talking about a mature love, a complete love, a love that is like the way the Father loves. And that love apparently extends to even our enemies. This challenges us as Christians to travel across boundaries and ideological lines in the sand. It challenges us to enter into other people's tribes and to show them the love that we have for them. Jesus said the kingdom of God is made up of folks who are humble, who are merciful, those who are peacemakers. By the way, did you know that in the Beatitudes, that the Beatitudes themselves are written as a chiasm? I've talked about this before, but if you go all the way up to chapter 5, right? Verse 3 through 10, this is a chiasm, okay? And the chiasm, basically a chiasm is a literary style that forces us, the reader, to put focus on the center. Because in the center, we discover the theme or the main point of the person who is communicating through chiasm, okay? Do you know what the center of the chiasm of the Beatitudes is? "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy." That means our lead foot as Christians must be in extending mercy. It means that we must extend love. That must be our lead foot. to everyone, even to our enemies, Nate. Yes, even to our very enemies. Why? Because that's what our Heavenly Father does. So don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that Christianity is the political solution to our problems in this country in 2024. What I am saying is Christianity is the solution to the problem of tribalism in humanity. The problem of tit for tat, right? Of punch back twice as hard, right? You hit me, I'm going to hit you back even harder. I'm going to destroy the other side, right? With facts, okay? I don't care if I offend you. That's a line out of the number one hit song that just hit the pop charts, ladies and gentlemen. All of these things contribute to the problem. What I'm saying is, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. That will actually solve the factious broken relationships that people have with each other in our society currently. And when tribalism is solved, then the politics will change. I promise you. So as Christians, let's just focus on fulfilling the Great Commission. That's the one job that Jesus gave us anyway, right? Doing what Jesus told us to do. That's what we need to do. And here's what's going to happen. If we are faithful in this, if we obey Jesus' commands as good disciples, we're going to see a byproduct of that, which, by the way, will be downstream. Okay, it won't be immediate, but it will be the healing of our nation. It's all connected, ladies and gentlemen. If we bring healing to people as Christians, the nation itself will heal. Amen? All right, now it's your turn to sound off. What do you think? Am I onto something here, or do you think I'm way off? Let me know in the comments below. As always, if you made it this far, you need to join my Patreon community. I just jumped into this ministry 100%. I hope you saw the live stream last week. Would you consider partnering with me so that we can take Wise Disciple further than ever before? Sign up for one of the Patreon tiers. You can get exclusive access to videos like this before they make it to YouTube. You can join me for exclusive live streams. You can ask me anything you want and so much more. The link for the Patreon is below. I'll return soon with more videos, but in the meantime, I'll say bye for now.